Hey, good afternoon, everyone. We're back at the mic, the Berean Pastors. Pastor Mike, what article did you find and why did you select it?
So the first article is 4-day work week has potential to take hold, starting with California. And then there's a second article that deals with a Texas school district moving to a 4-day school week.
Okay.
And so the two topics seem to go together. I do think it's an interesting idea in the state of work conditions and getting employees at this point to talk about a 4-day work week, but California is looking to vote and mandate it, and so I thought that definitely would bring a good discussion today on are there pluses about a 4-day work week, but are there minuses, and go from there.
All right, very good. All right, let's lead out on the article. It's a 3-minute read.
All right. So California could codify chill vibes into law as its state legislature considers a proposal that could make a 32-hour work week a reality for workers at private companies with 500 or more employees. But maybe wait a tick before you crank up the phantom planet. The State Assembly's Labor and Employment Committee will decide this week if it will move forward and opposition, including that from California's Chamber of Commerce, has been staunch. The Wall Street Journal reported last week. Regardless of what shakes out in Sacramento, a certain momentum is swinging in the direction of alternative work arrangements, according to Brian Kropp, Group VP and Chief of HR Research Group at Gartner. Kropp told HR Brew, the California bill is indicative of a changing tide. The fact that it's getting a lot of attention and that it's getting closer to potentially passing speaks to the momentum around companies thinking differently about what work looks like. Companies are experimenting. The idea of a shortened week isn't so radical, Kropp told us. Last summer, only 2% of companies were experimenting with a 4-day work week or an alternative schedule, that it jumped to 15% by March. According to unpublished research conducted by Gartner, that surveyed 250 executives at firms in the U.S. and the U.K. Kropp said that 15% is still not a very large percentage, but given the tight labor market, he believes organizations will continue to attempt to woo talent via alternative schedules. The remote work consultancy, Build Remote, has a running list of companies worldwide implementing 4-day and asynchronous schedules. What companies are trying to experiment with is if they become more flexible, not just about where people work, but when and how much people work. Then they see that what really is a competitive advantage in terms of attracting and recruiting talent. So what kind of alternative schedules? New riffs on the work week aren't always confined to a 32-hour spread across 4 days. Some are shuffling the paradigm, he noted, and there are other companies that are experimenting with things like every third Friday off or every other Friday. And beyond that, Kropp says, there's a work-when-you-want approach gaining steam. Certain employers are telling employees, if you want to work early in the morning...
I'm already doing that. Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Like 16 hours a day. Yeah.
We're gonna adopt a work-when-you-want-paid approach. All right, if you want to work early in the mornings, then take afternoons off and work 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. or some version of it. Go for it. It's all about mental health and productivity because people are burnt out from working from home, Kropp said. Companies are evaluating asynchronous schedules and bet those companies are making is essentially if my employees have a better mental health and have more breaks from work, that when they're actually at work, they'll be more productive. The California ripple effect. If California were to adopt a 32-hour work week as the standard, there's a lot of other states that are going to follow, like Massachusetts and Vermont, Kropp predicted, adding that companies with workforces spread across California and other states might be forced to adopt a shorter week. And as soon as you get past 3 or 4 different places adopting a 4-day week, what most companies then do is just adopt it for the whole workforce.
All right, that's our first article. It's kind of interesting to note that it's a 32-hour work week. It's not 4 10-hour days.
Right, yeah. That's what I was thinking, too. Like I had told Mike before the podcast, you know, in a lot of ways, I think a 4 10-hour day work week is a lot more profitable. Yeah, because a lot of times there's projects you're in, you're getting in, you know, then all of a sudden, time, you know, it's 4 o'clock, got to go home, or 5 o'clock, and you know, just cut a project off and put it off to the next day instead of just saying, you know, I'm just going to stay and finish it, knowing that, you know, tomorrow I can, you know, head out early or come in late or whatever. So
I worked at a place that had a 4-10-hour workday, 4 days, 10 hours, and the number of times we did that was zero. It was 5 day, 6 day, 7 day. I never worked a single four day week, you know, week since I started.
So you had a lot of overtime.
Oh yeah, and did. It was a night shift too. 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so you took days off and came in to work at nights when you wanted to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's how they build it. You know, hey, come work nights. It's real, you know. We never worked a single 4 day week. The company was like booming and growing, you know. And
so, Jonathan, so out of that personal experience, like obviously we here at the, around the table know your work ethic. But would it have been possible? Like, were there people that could have, or that was just you? Like, hey, I like this money thing. I want more.
Oh no, this was one of those work environments too where things were expected. Like, if you didn't show up 15 minutes early before it was time to clock in, then you were considered late, even though you couldn't clock in.
Right.
Just like a lot of that kind.
That
of
was a long time ago, John.
Yep, it was. It's been 20 years since.
Everything's changed in 20 years.
But that company is like 5 times the size. It has 5 times the machines and two new buildings. And
I don't know. I think for me, it all comes down to the individual. I mean, you either have a work ethic or you don't. You know, in this, you know, I think there are some people that would thrive in a, you know, if you give them a job assignment and say this is the expectation, they're going to get it done no matter when it is. But then other people, you know, if it's the work as you want, well, I don't ever want to work, so I just want to get paid for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember years ago I had a guy that, you know, did work for me at some rentals that I had, and he literally, I mean, he could do just about anything, but I'd call him at 10 o'clock in the morning, he was still in bed, couldn't get him up, you know, I had to drive down there at noon, wake him up just to get him to work. And then there came a point I just said, you know, hey, this isn't going to work, and I fired him. And he got a job at Goodyear Tire, clocked in every morning at 6 a.m., and, you know, he told me, he said, if I'm late 3 times, I'm fired. He worked there for years and never got fired. And I was just I guess I should have just put a time clock in, you know, at the, you know, in the garage and had him clock in for me. But, you know, so he needed structure. You know, he needed somebody that said, you have to be here at this time, clock in, and be supervised. And he thrived in that. You know, he's a great worker and did, you know, he could do just about anything. But so, being left alone in this environment of just kind of work when you want and do whatever, he couldn't function that way.
And so that's where, for me, looking at the article, I think businesses can try to shuffle things around and try to be more appealing to get workers. I'm great with that. My challenge is with California trying to put the law into effect for companies with over 500 employees that they have to go to the 30-hour, 4-day work week. And so that was my challenge with this article and this topic. But if there are companies that feel like that they can get as much done or maybe even more and create a better work environment by going to a 4-day work week or asynchronous, or, you know.
It almost seems like it would have to be based more upon the type of entity that it is. Mm-hmm. A service-based retail type establishment, I could see very much as you can do that. Because it's the same, you know, or an assembly line where you're doing the same repetitive task over and over again. But other entities where it's more ambiguous and more project-based and, you know, takes several days, I don't know if that would be as productive. Because what they're not just talking about, you know, is what you guys kind of mentioned, is making the days that they are working longer so that you can be more productive on those days. It's almost like, and it's also a very recent mindset, which you almost kind of wonder how much of this is just response out of, we shut down the nation, people got a little taste of not going to work at all for anything, still getting all their money, And then when they did have to go back, they worked from home. And so there's this that lack of the labor force that we're dealing with. It's not actually that it's beneficial. It's we just need employees, and so we're going to try to do everything we can to get someone to come work for us.
And what really strikes is interesting is if the legislature in California really thinks that this is something that is worthwhile, why don't they go ahead and run it with the government and all the employees of the government first?
Well, because they already have way too many employees, and they got four of them standing around watching one person actually work, so they're not getting a whole lot done.
So,
but even before COVID, was it Google or I think it was Microsoft, Google, one of those. I think they kind of had that same mindset where, you know, they kind of allowed, and I think it depended what department you were in, but, you know, they kind of allowed their employees to come in and work for a few hours, and they could leave and go work out or go take a nap or, you know, go do something else and then come back and do some more work. And they were very fluid with their employees and kind of structured their work day. Like, you could structure your own work day however you want it. And their whole thought process was the mental health of the individual and the productivity of, you know, maximizing what you felt like you could do kind of thing. And, you know, it seemed to work fairly well for them. But again, it wasn't mandated. It wasn't somebody telling them, you have to do this. They were choosing to do that because they thought that it was something that worked for them.
Yeah, so this goes back to the 1900s. You know, in 1900, we had a 70-hour work week on average. And then Upton Sinclair wrote the book, The Jungle. And it highlighted the factories, safety concerns, meatpacking concerns in the Chicago area, and by 1920 it had dropped to a 56-hour work week. Then the progressives came in. So in 1938, Roosevelt, FDR, signs in a 44-hour work week. 1940, we go to a 40-hour work week, and that became the adopted norm between the progressive and World War eras. The problem is that we were an industrial nation then, and we're not now. We're a service-based nation. So a lot of the jobs that y'all are talking about and bringing up or that we would actually perform ourselves being older men are more manual labor-based, Brian. So you were right on with that idea of it. But it was in 2015 that they began doing a lot of research into mental health with these companies. Mm-hmm. And Google is the one who piloted the program. One of the things that they did that was very interesting was you could take a break for as long as you needed to, and they had this massive break room, and in it, no technology was allowed in the room. You would go in, you would sit, you would be in a clean space, so to speak, but they would have sticky notes, and they would have an entire wall that had sticky notes on it, and they would post ideas on the wall, and somebody would take it down, refute it, put some more sticky notes with it, put it back up. And they had this constant brainstorming idea going on. One guy takes a break, goes in there, and he's the guy who got the basket going, Google Pay. And his coding ideas is what produced that. And they attributed it to the idea that he was able to take a break and move along. A lot of the research has been based in the idea that your brain is a muscle. Even all the way back into the 1990s, research was being done on biowaves for students. And this will kind of play into the Texas thing a little bit. The idea of it is that, you know, you process with one side of your brain, your humanities, and you process with the other side of the brain, the logic-based science and math. Therefore, to have them offset, so you don't have two periods of humanities in succession of each other. You're constantly switching back and forth. One side of your brain is resting, processing, placing everything in order in the subconscious mind, while the other one is actively engaged. So if I go to math first, while I'm in English, my subconscious is locking in my English or my math. My active brain is working on English, and then I go to science, boom, it switches. I go to this processing site on this side. And when they started doing that in other countries, they saw better results. They also felt like the day break created a longer gap in what we call the circle back methodology of learning. And it's one of the things we're using in the academy now with the AB scheduling and why it's the way it is. Not a pure block in one semester and another block in a second semester. It's the AB, is because it's called disruptive memory loss. Within 72 hours of any new engaged material, you will lose 75% of it unless you're forced to engage it. But you can't engage it within 24 hours. You need to go 48 hours at a minimum on that engagement, because that's when it starts to go away. And when you come back and you review it, you force them to answer questions on it and everything else, you disrupt the learning. And now instead of a 72-hour window, you have a full week before they start losing at a massive rate. So you're constantly cycling that information back into them each session. That's why you do the quizzes. That's why you do the things that you do. So all of this was going on pre-COVID. One of the other companies that came along pre-COVID is the Whoop, Whoop Strap, and I have one on my wrist. And what it does is it tracks your biorhythms 24/7. I do it because I have high blood pressure and I want to keep track of my heart rate. But one of the things that it tracks is what was called HRV, and that's your heart rate variability. It's your ability of your heart to speed up or slow down from stimulus. That is the adrenaline surges. You're startled, or you have to get up and just move about. You have to do something. And that's the number of milliseconds between beats. A guy like Tom Brady's, his is somewhere around 150 milliseconds between beats. That means when his heart beats, it beats with such force and such strength that his body doesn't need another infusion of blood for a bit of time. The worse that you are, the more out of shape you are, the more it shortens down. They did this research in education, and they found that they did this with combat soldiers coming back from Afghanistan and teachers who were teaching, and they found that they had near identical biological rhythms. That the teachers weren't being burnt out, they were suffering from battle fatigue. And that created the sense of apathy, the acceptance of mediocrity and everything else, because they are just completely and utterly beat down in this aspect from high stress rates, low sleep rates, not getting enough REM, not getting enough deep sleep. It accounts for the mental fog that they go through. And what they found is that the brain cannot focus sustained for a prolonged period. 90 minutes is about the max, and you've got to shift and do something else. And
have you seen a Marvel superhero?
And yes, I have, and that's why you have scene changes every 2 to 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's so why that,
so your brain has that movement process to it.
Facts.
What we're not getting into, and I guess the Texas School Day article doesn't cover it, but it, and when we get to it, is the amount of cost that is saved by this. I mean, in a school alone, on a 4-day work week in a public school system, you'd be talking about saving gas on all the buses that wouldn't run, food that would not have to be cooked, whether it's eaten or not, because you have to cook for the whole school's population, the utilities that wouldn't be ran, the facilities would not be used for that day, so there's less maintenance to be done to it, the janitorial services, and not to mention this entire Whoop HRV stress-related thing that we had talked about. But then here's another interesting piece, is we all know that 32 hours is that magic number on health insurance.
Yeah.
So now these companies won't be forced to, because they'll start hitting under that threshold of having to provide the health insurance.
Which is just another push towards the marketplace.
Or right.
Government.
Because you won't control. Get it from work. So
right, so you'll become more reliant on the government.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things have these massive domino effects that we have that y'all brought up, but I just wanted to give a kind of succinct.
So I have two questions on the whole workday week thing, and Jack, you might be the most proficient at answering this. Am I correct that Hitler tried doing a 10-day work week during World War II?
I have no idea about that. I know he used slaves, so I'm not sure that they got
days off. I thought I remember when I was teaching middle school history that he tried to be more productive, that they had to go 10 days
and then a day off
before they got their day off.
Yeah, he was trying to change the week to a 10-day week. Move it from a 7-day week to a 10-day week. That's been tried numerous times.
So, because I was
historically,
as we've talked about, as we were reading through this and talking about it, like those, there were two numbers that came into my mind. One was that Hitler had tried the 10-day week, but the other was Exodus 34, in which there's a command in 6 days you do your work. On that seventh day, you rest. Now, I understand that was an agrarian society.
And what part of that is the command? Is the command to rest, or is the command to do 6 days of work?
Do all your work in 6 days, so that you can rest on the seventh.
Yeah, like the,
well, and so that's why I want, you know, because that's why we do this podcast. Is it's not just to read news articles; it's to what's the biblical Christian perspective on it. Because most of our people, you know, in our society today, only have a 5-day work week. So if the command is you're supposed to be working for 6 days. Well, then how many of the churches across the nation that would be Bible-believing, God-honoring, you know, churches aren't actually doing that? And so that's, you know, I wanted to throw that out there for us to kick around for a second.
Yeah, but one thing we don't know, too, Brian, though, is how many breaks did they take in the day of sitting under the shade, like Abraham is when the Lord approaches and it's not dinner time yet.
Like the Genesis 18?
Or the times that the elders are sitting in the city gate. The idea of taking a break from work. In an agrarian society, you can work for an hour or two, go take a 15, 20, 30-minute break, go back and work for a little bit. We know that most agrarian societies have a siesta time during the heat hours of the day, and then they go back in the evening and work a little more before the sunlight's gone.
Yeah, I'm not debating whether the aspect of a break. And I don't know that even inside this article, like, that's the sense that anyone would be denying, you know, a reasonable amount of,
well, what I'm saying,
take a
is,
break from the work that you've been doing, whether it's a mental break or a physical break.
Right, so what I'm saying is though, you don't have an agrarian society this picture of clocking in at 8 and an expectation to work until 4.
Or five.
This 9-to-5 type of mentality, right, of I'm there and I'm sustained work the whole time. It's I work, I shift gears, I do a different chore, I take a break, I work, I do this. And that's what Google would look like.
Yeah. But even within your illustration, Brian, I mean, even if you went to a 5-day, you know, I'm at the office for 5 days, I'm going to say the majority, I'm painting with a broad brush, but the majority of homeowners anyway, you know, their Saturday is mowing the yard, taking care of, fixing stuff around the house.
Mowing the lawns, that's what I was going to say. I mean,
doing,
not working at a,
I mean,
job.
Right, you know, it's not, you're not working for pay, but you're still working, trying to get stuff done.
Right, I would say that
for yourself,
you know, there's a large portion. I was
working
just
on your car, changing your brakes, or, you know, stuff.
I bet if you polled our Christian community, just the Berean community alone, if we picked over at BBA and we said, okay, we're sending this home to all the parents, the ones that wouldn't be in favor of a 4-day are the ones that actually have a 5-day job and they need the daycare services. But if that wasn't an issue because of what Steve is describing, the ones who actually go to church would say 4 days of school, a day of household maintenance, a day of church. Now I have a day to spend with family that is absolutely uninterrupted, pure leisure. And I think that would be an amazing, appealing thing to a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. I try to get the grass done if I'm going to cut the grass on a weeknight. That way, come Saturday morning, I can literally spend the morning playing around the house with the kids. that it's not, hey, I have to go outside and, like, you've watched me leave the house for 5 days already this week and go do something else without you.
Yeah, and it's this cloudy idea in my mind when I was thinking about this, and I haven't, like, got it just articulated well, but I would submit that, you know, since the 50s, or you know, the 50s is probably a good, safe place to say that we progressed more and more towards, you know, both parents working outside the home. So, you know, a larger percentage, not every home, but a lot of percentages. So we got like two income households is how we would describe this. And I would say, you know, obviously the mother, you know, the mom working at home traditionally, you know, in ages past and up to maybe the 50s, the way that it was, you know, she's working. I mean, we understand that, but she's not out there working for a wage at a factory or something like that. Well, I think that the now having two income earners, in a way, American families are working, in quotes, a lot more. Because just think about what brings that along. You know, if you've got both of the parents out of the home and you've got children, then someone has to watch the children. So another person has gone to work. So in essence, when you've got a two-income home, you've really got a three-income going on because you've got two incomes that are leaving the home to go work at a job somewhere, and you've got a third person who's being paid to watch the children, whereas mom used to be the one that watched the children for no, you know, wage that was spelled out. And it's like this, there's something, you know, that's got to have impacted the way things are in America. I hear you talk a lot about people who are lazy and don't work, and we've got that whole element, but I also think there's a whole other flip side of that is where people are out of the house and working way more than they ever are, you know, because I see parents rolling in here, you know, at 6 o'clock at night, you know, both mom and dad to pick up kids from aftercare and stuff like that. So I think there's balancing parts of this where in one sense the American family is out in the workforce much more, almost, I would say, submit somewhere near, you know, almost twice as much as they were even 100 years ago. Well, maybe not 100 years when they were child labor, but
yeah,
somewhere
there. Well, if you go back 100 years, John, you have the whole component of work being at the house a tremendous amount. Doing laundry was work. Planting a garden was work.
Right.
It was never-ending amounts of work. There wasn't no plumber to call to go do it. You had to figure out how to do it yourself. I mean, so people...
But that has kind of, in what I was, you know, people are still having to do a lot of that. As we mentioned, you still have to cut your grass and you still have to do this. But at the same, and you still have to prepare, moms have to come home, and typically moms come home and prepare meals and do all of that. But now trying to juggle and balance also being in the workforce, dealing with pressures from
working bosses. A workforce job and then also working domestic job.
Right, yeah. I mean, we're kind of... And so in one essence, you know, one sense, we're kind of burning the candle more at both ends than ever.
But, you know, John, you made reference to the parents who drop off their kids at our school as a point of reference. And obviously, that demographic is a fairly small demographic, and that being defined as people who pay to have their children go to a private school. I don't know to what degree that is a representation. The other factor that makes it difficult to judge in our community, this is an army town, or a Fort Bragg town, so you go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, you get off at 5:30, but I tell you, John, you're not working during those 11 hours nonstop, okay? Yes, you're there, but you're doing physical fitness, you're taking a shower, you're going to breakfast, you're going to lunch. If you need to run an errand in the middle of the day, you go run your errand in the middle of the day, then you show back up at the office for 30 minutes at 5 o'clock, then you leave at 5:30, which is why you see somebody coming to pick up their kids.
Right, and I'm not necessarily talking about fatigue.
Right.
I'm talking about just this idea of being nonstop.
Busyness.
And even if it's, you know, we have people waking up at 6 o'clock, even if it's waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, starting to play your video games, you know, whatever it is, we've got this idea in our society, like we're just always busy. And the idea of Sabbath really... is not being done, I would submit. I mean, like on Sundays, people are going to Lowe's and getting their planting their flowers and doing all that.
Yeah, there's the Sabbath's gone.
Yeah.
Right? I mean...
And you know, even personally, I know that, you know, I leave it out of my week many times because, you know, if I was honest, Sunday's not a Sabbath
for
me.
No, of course it's not.
It's like one of the most stressful, intense work times. Not that this job is, like, super stressful, but it's the one I worry about the most. You know, Sunday is, like, the highlight of my week.
Yeah, you're a priest working at the tabernacle. I mean, the Mosaic Law calls for an exception.
But, you know, being in the classroom 5 days a week leaves only Saturday to try to get stuff done that
right.
You know, you got to get done. And so, yeah, I mean...
I think a four-day work week is a wonderful thing. I just don't think the government has any business involving itself right. in it whatsoever.
I get that. So that's a question I have, is why does it matter whether or not the legislature is dealing with
exactly.
this?
Exactly. Just do
why
it
can't the company make the decision? Is it over... I mean, you know, we mentioned the healthcare thing.
Socialism. No, it's socialism. It's the idea of the government is going to make your life better for you.
Right. The government's trying to, you know, force... Well, that was the whole thing, 8 months ago. You know, if you have 100 employees or more, you know, every employee has to get a vaccine. Well, you know, it's just them trying to flex their muscle and saying, we can make you do this.
Right, and so vote for us, every hour, 33 and above is going to be the new overtime for you. So, I mean, all they're doing, and that's, it comes full circle, okay? What I mean by full circle is, all right, new standard, 33 hours and above is now overtime, all right? Coca-Cola's got it. Now the cost of the 2-liter bottle is $1.239 instead of $1.39. Because you've just created 25% of our hours of work is now going to be overtime.
Yep.
And these progressives think that the major corporations go, oh, okay, we'll reduce our profit margin. That is never happening. That, like, forget that. They're not your friend. Coca-Cola, General Motors, BMW, they exist for one purpose,
to make money. And make their stockholders happy.
Right. And more than anything, I mean... That markup percentage is what drives their train. Just like you do with your lawn care business, it's that labor rate. It doesn't matter how many people I have working for me. If my labor rate's not good, I'm going to make adjustments to make the labor rate what I want it to be so that I can make money. If I can't have my markup on the Coca-Cola be whatever their markup is, then we have to adjust things so that we can get our markup back to where it is because someone has determined this markup is profitable. And this is what we have to do.
Because the business has to make money to be...
Absolutely.
That's the whole general idea of what we call a free economy and all this. And in California, they want a government-managed economy. Even though we look at all these nations around us globally that have never been able to make it work, I mean, we're seeing right now what Russia looks like. And it is not a pretty sight. Okay. For 70 days, a rinky-dink little country called Ukraine has held off a global superpower. Okay? They couldn't even take their capital, and they were supposed to be able to do it in 3 days. We're finding out that in Russia, they have no secure communications. Okay? In 1989, when I was a private in the Army, we had full secure communications. This is 40 years later, and Russia does not have secure communications. In other words, the Ukrainians are listening to the Russians' moves and knowing where they're going next and defeating them using the knowledge of unsecured communications. My point is that a socialist republic or a socialist country in any way, shape, or form doesn't work out. It's not productive. It's not a good thing.
But that's not just California. We got Texas to talk about now.
So let's transition to the school situation first, or at this point, and then we can kind of gel it all together. So this article is a Texas school district moving to a 4-day school week due to teacher shortage.
So a Texas school district will be moving to a 4-day school week for the 2022-23 school year. The Jasper ISD School Board unanimously approved the academic calendar at a March 16 meeting. The school district said this new calendar was due to teacher shortage and retention. The calendar developed by the district-wide Education Improvement Committee, consisting of teachers, staff, parents, and community members, is a 4-day model. The length of the school day was not extended, and the calendar includes the required 75,600 minutes plus 5 bonus school days of student instructional time. On Fridays that teachers come in, they will be able to have PLCs and professional development without missing class time. Jack, do you know what PLC is?
Yes, professional learning communities.
Okay. Retaining and recruiting quality teachers is very important to all school districts during a nationwide teacher shortage, and the Board of Trustees is working diligently for our JISD staff, the school district said. The calendar development process began in November and consisted of district-wide Educational Improvement Council meetings, and input was gathered from all staff members and the community through surveys. The first survey was community-wide and emailed to all parents and staff and placed on the district's social media pages. The results were 64% in favor of a four-day week. This result had 438 responses. The second survey was sent to all JISD teachers. The results were 84% in favor of a four-day week. Other Texas school districts that have adopted four-day school weeks include Devers ISD and Athens ISD, which promotes its four-day instructional week on its district homepage, according to Good Morning America. The school district in Jasper, Texas, is about 134 miles northeast of Houston, near the eastern Texas and western Louisiana border. Along with the new academic calendar, the board also unanimously voted to give teachers and staff retention incentives for the 22 and 23 school year. Teachers will receive $3,000 and all other staff will receive $1,500 to be paid in three installments.
So I definitely wanted Jack to be here for today's podcast just to get his perspective on the feasibility, the pluses, the minuses, and then I figured we would close with putting the two ideas together.
Well, I think the savings on the buildings is going to be huge. I understand the PLC element. So what happens is, as every state decides the number of hours that you absolutely have to have for contact. Like the state of Virginia is 990 hours of school. North Carolina is 1,025. So we have to have 1,025 hours of instruction to be considered a school year.
Which, by comparison, is 61,500 compared to the 75,000.
Hmm. He's talking about minutes, right?
Minutes? Yeah. So
I'm talking hours.
Right, I know. So I did the math real quick. So you said North Carolina requires 1,025 hours.
Yep.
60 minutes an hour gives us 61,500 minutes, comparable to the 75,600 minutes that the Texas this Texas district has.
So they go longer.
Right.
Then there's... So what happens is you're in this hour count, and what it comes down to is about 175 days in a 6.5 hour day, roughly. So you're in that zone, depending on what you do, how long you take between breaks and between classes. You get through this process of what's happening, and you're factoring this in as you're designing your school year. And you quickly discover that the only way I can do professional development and the only way that I can do collaborative environment, and that is a huge issue in schools, is they already work on an egg crate model. That is, I'm my own teacher and I'm in my room and I go in my room at 8 and I come out of my room at 3 predominantly, and I own my room. Don't come in my room. Don't do anything with my room. Don't tell me what to do with my students in my room. And they get that mentality going, and it becomes counterproductive because everything that happens in that type of environment is counterintuitive to the world that the student's going to live in. So the student sees no collaboration between teachers, and there's no collaborative synergy that's being brought forth. It's, you know, we've had the conversation. How many times do we say, wish we had more time to sit down so everybody would understand, get together on one piece of paper, what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, and make it happen. That's what a PLC is for. And it's designed to look at data and say, okay, reading is low. What's going to be our initiative? And all the reading specialists are there together, because we know, Steve, from designing schedules, planning periods don't always mesh, that all your English teachers are off at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you have to add days to your school year to make that happen. How much then are you going to eat into the summer? Like the public schools here, their teachers are on for 225 school days. And they come back in the summer periodically, and they're paid for those days. Okay, so you go to a private school. Am I going to pay for another month of pay that's not spent with students? And yet we know that that's one of the best investments of your money possible, because it makes your teachers better to be with the students. So if they can figure out a way to add 30 minutes to the school day, an extra hour to the school day, and go a little longer in the school day, come off of that Friday, whatever it is, to a 4-day, and they can get that professional development, they're going to save an untold amount of money. That's just unbelievable. And the idea is, if it's used properly, it should raise the quality of instruction, which will create a desire for people to move into your school district. The more students you have, the more money you have. So there's always this, the money follows the student.
But what about the
child care
issue, Jack?
If you're doing a four-day work week.
Well, then it matches up beautifully.
Right.
We're talking about Texas versus California.
Right.
Right.
And
like,
if this,
let's say we want to do a 4-day work week.
Yeah,
our parents wouldn't go for it.
No, we would have you would have to hire babysitters, or the parents would have to figure it out. They're coming out of COVID, and they're saying parents have already figured this out. Parents have been doing it for 2 years.
The child care aspect.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And if they really want to not lose instruction, they can always make that a virtual day. And then the teachers do professional development, and the kids work on a pre-planned, pre-recorded assignment.
Or you offer, I mean...
And you save facility money.
In our community, you could offer extended care, child care for that day, but it'd be greatly reduced of... You know, the mental work would be very different than having to teach, correct, grade, you know, the same education product because it's child care. And, I mean, one of the things, at least within our community, I'm thinking about is what ends up happening then with the extra income that we as an institution and school receive through morning and aftercare, through our school lunch program, through, you know, some of those other things that, just little fringe things that bring in a little extra income here or there, because we don't get it based upon the number of students in our school district, because we're a private institution and it's based upon what the families pay. And then there's the question of, so let me get this straight. I was spending $6,000 for 5 days a week of care. Now you want me to spend $6,000 for 4 days a week of care.
No, see, you said it wrong. You're not paying us for the care. You're paying us for our knowledge that we're giving to the student. You already have the wrong mindset. You're paying for the education. You're paying for the course. You're not paying for the child care.
Right. Case in point, my school is $10,000 more than Berean.
Right.
Because the perception is that the education
is that much higher. Yeah, so now if I go to a 4-day week and my teachers get a better training, they raise up the scores on the student scores. Now our students are National Merit Scholars. We got people knocking down our door. We can charge what they charge, because we're not paying. Because you're not paying
for
child
care. But Jack, how do you? What's our day look like? 7 a.m. to 4 o'clock.
Roughly, maybe 4:30.
Well, that, or you use your same 8 to 3, but then you have to make it 4 weeks longer or whatever.
Yeah, you could go to that number of hours.
Right, we're like, well, no, I'm just saying, like, you know, the one here in Texas, they said, you know, they're not lengthening the school day. They're not extending their school day any.
Summer break's smaller, Steve.
So, right, so obviously the school year has to become longer.
Yeah, 1 week.
I wonder if it has to be more than 1 week.
Do you think this translates over into like the year-round schools? Because in the last couple of pre-COVID, we saw several schools that were kind of converting over to being year-round schools, that they would do, what is it, like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, or whatever the case might have been.
Three.
Two on, three off?
They do three off, yeah.
Because that, I mean, that they almost seems six. Like it's the same general idea.
They do, they do 6 weeks on, 3 weeks off.
Well, in our town, if you did a Friday, for example, how many four-day weekends are there, Jack, there, military-wise? Right away, almost once a month, there's a single Friday for sure. Mm-hmm. In several months, there's two Fridays. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a matter of you'd have an A-B schedule like we have.
Right.
Mondays and Wednesdays would be A, Tuesdays and Thursdays would be, and it would always be like that. You would never flip-flop because you're going to school those days.
Yeah, right. My school has already started to do that since COVID. You know, we were in school when everybody else wasn't, you know, kind of like Berean was for a while. But what they did is every time there's a 4 day weekend now, that's a teacher work day on that Friday, and then you're off on Monday. And so you can work from home to do your grades and all that teacher work day stuff, or you can come in if you want, and then you have that other day to be off. I mean, there's like eight of them this year.
Yeah, and we thought we were going to have a lot of pushback, but we didn't. The parents just rolled with it. We told them we're going to do half days the last Friday of every month for professional development of our teachers or for teacher work day.
You guys, events. I want to back up to that, John. You guys, maybe we should turn the mic off. Huh? You guys lined up your school calendar to the Army 4 day weekends.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great idea.
You could easily do that.
That is a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's publicized.
Well, it's federal.
Yeah, I mean, there's your typical ones, you know, Memorial Day.
Yeah, of course, they're all right there. It's not a secret.
I don't know every single one, but I've been there 14 years, many more in the last year than.
I mean, because we were talking, Jack, we've talked more than one occasion, how to get more Sabbath in for the teachers.
Yeah.
Right? One of the ways you decrease burnout, or what you described in a very technical way, is called rest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rest, downtime.
That thing you're supposed to do on the seventh day?
Yeah, and I will say we've done that this year. We made rest and mental health a massive focus in our school year design this year. We did a professional development element on it. We earned a CEU just on rest, and it's important to classroom instruction. And we've gone to the point where we tell our teachers if they teach period one, two, and three, and they don't have a class period four, they can go home. They don't need to stay through the rest of the day. Go home. Take a nap. The ones that are here at 3 o'clock, they can do the dismissal. Go take a nap. Go rest. If you happen to be one that has a fourth period class, but you have third period free, go get a cup of coffee. Go run an errand. Turn off your lights in your classroom. Lay your head on your desk. Whatever, as long as you're prepared to teach and your grades are being done rightly, you pick the rhythm of how you work it. And we tried to make sure that everybody had at least one period in each day to rest. Some were not able to have that, and they have all four periods on a day, but they only have two periods on the next day, so they have a half day off. And
creative things are definitely going to have to be done to retain teachers.
And they love it. Because it creates for them this breathing time, this feeling like they're not being crushed by the constant workload.
Right.
So how do we, I'll throw this back out, how do we balance that with our biblical mandates of what Paul says in Thessalonians about if anyone will not work, he doesn't eat, with the concept we already kind of addressed in an agrarian society, it's 6 days of work. You know, we were created to work. Work was instituted before the fall. So how do we balance that and as Christians in the sense of should I be in favor of the four-day week? Do I feel like, oh, well, I'm just going, you know, I'll just work for 4 days rather than 5 days? Because, you know, there's part of me that feels like, well, this is just a propensity towards laziness and wanting to take time off. I'm not denying the mental health. Like, yeah, I understand it within a teaching world.
Okay, but
But outside of even just the teaching.
But Brian, you've got to understand, the entire world was agrarian.
Yeah.
Adam wasn't told, tend the factory. Mm-hmm. He was told, tend the garden.
Right, which didn't grow that much overnight.
Okay, so all of his work centered around home. So part of tending the garden would have also been the upkeep of his home sheltering.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been any distinction. It's all one.
It was all one and of itself. Ours are so drastically different now in a city environment and industrialization. We have a block of work, and then we have a block of home work, but we don't call it that, but it's work that has to be done in the home.
Chores.
And if we're working a 5-day off from the housework, and then we have this 1 day of working at the home, and then you go into worship, which we know for many people is not truly a day of rest because their mind's constantly running, or they're fighting the temptation to take off because they want to spend time with family. At what point do you actually have a true Sabbath?
You don't. That's a struggle. I would be very in favor if you said to me, Pastor, I want to implement a 4-day school week, and we could close this campus on Fridays.
Well, and we tried that with the church office. It was years ago. Yeah. It kind of sort of worked, but I mean,
few that are going to want to work.
Well, the only hiccup that we found was so many people still came by on Friday
because of EBA,
because of the school, or just church people that were like, "Oh, I didn't know I didn't know the office was closed on Friday. I wanted to drop this off or bring this by, or I needed to see somebody." But again, I mean, it would be a learning curve, and they would just have to figure out, okay.
I promise you that if we shut down, there was nobody here on Friday.
Right, this school is
both sides, the whole works. You drive by, and it looks like a Saturday instead of a Friday. I bet all of our employees, teachers, everybody would love that.
Yeah.
It would just be the potential of those that need the child care.
Yes,
what about the dynamic between hourly workers and salary workers? I mean, because honest, as a salary employee, like, you tell me that we just cut the work week from 40 hours to 32 hours and my salary doesn't change.
Yeah, but I'm not saying 32. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that at all. That's not what I'm arguing for.
We're looking at keeping the same amount of work. We're just looking at restructuring it.
Hours are the same.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that or, you know, again, you know, you're here Monday through Thursday from 8 to 4.
Figure it out.
And then on Friday, you know, you work from home and you catch up. And that was kind of the concept then.
There's no church work getting done at home.
Well, for some of us, we can. Yeah. But, you know, the concept for us was, you know, we worked Monday through Thursday. The office was open. And then Friday, the office was technically closed. But, you know, that gave the pastors the chance to kind of come in and finish up, you know, Sunday school study, slides, you know, last minute kind of things. But the problem was somebody was always banging on the door and never really got.
No, the child care issue was the major issue,
yeah.
Jack.
So, Brian, with your small children, to quote the article that said work when you want mentality is growing, yours would be a work when you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Work at the office.
Well, Agnes Turlington told me, she says, obviously you guys haven't figured out how to watch television.
All right, thanks for listening. Have a great day.